Now from the KSFR newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, October 1st. New Mexico 3rd District Congressman Ben Ray Luan is decrying the federal government shutdown forced by Republican resistance to the nation's Affordable Care Act. Luan's statement says in part, quote, "The longer the Tea Party shutdown lasts, the longer the people of New Mexico will pay the price," end quote. Effects of the shutdown will be felt immediately here in New Mexico with its many military installations, as half of all their federal civilian employees are furloughed. Kirtland Air Force Base alone has more than 3,700 federal civilian workers. Meanwhile, all 13 federal park sites in New Mexico are closed, as they are across the country. At Bandelier National Monument, Park Ranger Chris Judson describes to KSFR News what the federal employees there have planned for the day.
We have an all-employee meeting, and then we're allowed until noon to do things like lock our offices, secure our files, change our phone messages, and then everyone, with a very few exceptions, must go home. We are on furlough status. We do not know if we will be paid for the period when we're told to go home. That'll be determined later. And, of course, we have no idea how long it lasts. This has been as short as a couple of days and as long as a couple of weeks, and no one has any idea.
And for some federal employees, the shutdown now means working for no pay for the time being, such as the case at the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque, where meteorologists are also charged with public safety responsibilities. Here's meteorologist Chuck Jones.
We're in a furlough status, and what that means for us is not much different. We are to report to work as usual, and even though we may not be getting paid now, we will obviously make it up down the road. So it's minimal impact for here. For us as meteorologists, the weather doesn't go on hiatus or into furlough status, so we will be here. We will continue to work and make sure we protect lives and property.
New Mexico's health insurance exchange is up and running today, October 1st. Individuals and small businesses can now begin enrollment into the plan of their choosing from among multiple offerings with different levels of coverage. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says that the cost of health premiums in our state are, for the most part, below or on par with national averages. Any individual coverage chosen from the exchange will become effective January 1st. For small businesses, however, coverage can begin as soon as November 1st. And we'll have more on this story for you a bit later as At Noon continues. According to an advocacy group for New Mexicans with disabilities, the state is not meeting its legal obligations for disabled people who receive Medicaid. The Albuquerque Journal reports that Disability Rights New Mexico presented a letter to the State Human Services Department claiming the state has an inadequate provider network for disabled New Mexicans and that the state isn't providing the services promptly. A Human Services Department attorney had no immediate comment on the letter. Santa Fe's Immigration Committee meets this afternoon. There'll be continuation of a previous discussion of same-sex marriage and its ramifications for immigrant gay couples. Recognition of such unions for non-citizens remains in nebulous territory here in New Mexico, without clear-cut legal status defined by state statute. New Mexico's Attorney General has previously stated that same-sex marriages performed in states and countries that grant that right must likely be recognized here. Los Alamos National Laboratory is recognizing the passing of the institution's third director, Harold Agnew, who died Sunday. He was at the helm of LANL from 1970 through 1979. He first came to Los Alamos as a graduate student in 1943 to work on the Manhattan Project. He later worked in the Weapons Nuclear Engineering Division and is credited with developing fail-safe methods for nuclear weapons that are still used today. Home prices in Santa Fe rose nearly 7% in August 2013 compared to the same month last year. CoreLogic, which tracks home prices nationwide, says the value of city different homes were also up from this past July's prices. The firm attributes the relatively small increase to an expected drop to real estate's off-season that coincides with the end of summer. Final numbers are in on viewership for the series finale of the Made in New Mexico cable series Breaking Bad. More than 10.3 million people watched the concluding episode of AMC's popular five-season show that used Albuquerque as its main location. Though only available to cable TV subscribers, the show easily bested all of Sunday's broadcast network programs. And weather for Santa Fe: sunny and dry today and tomorrow, highs both days in the upper 70s with overnight lows in the mid-40s. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 70 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At Noon will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
At Noon on KSFR now segues to today's feature stories. Here in New Mexico and across the nation, the health insurance exchanges established by the nation's Affordable Care Act, casually called Obamacare, begin enrollment. It's to be noted on this first day of a federal government shutdown caused by House GOP members seeking to either defund or delay the country's health care law that the law proceeds entirely unaffected by the political turmoil in Washington. New Mexico's health insurance exchange is now taking enrollment for both individuals and small businesses. A number of plans can be chosen from among multiple offerings with different levels of coverage. Here in our state, the cost of premiums on average is either below or at parity with overall national rates, says the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. J.R. Dameron is the chairman of the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange, and he joins us now by phone. Dr. Dameron, tell us what's happening as of today.
Yes, what's going to happen is that the enrollment starts October 1, but the coverage for individuals does not start until January 1, 2014. But individuals can enroll in the exchange for up to 6 months. So it would be October 1 to March 31st of next year. So October 1 of this year to March 31st of next year. So individuals have 6 months, actually, to enroll in that. Now, small businesses, however, they can start enrolling in the exchange for their employees who are eligible to sign up for coverage under the plan that the business has selected. They can that can start October 1, and then the coverage on that starts November 1, 2013, this year.
And, Doctor, so much focus has been given to this October 1st date. Does that mean that folks must make haste and sign up immediately, or can there be a measured, orderly process up until the start of individual implementation on January 1st?
Absolutely. There should not be a concern about having to sign up very early. I think that everybody should go online. You can go to the New Mexico, the NMHIX.com website, or the new website as well is www.bbwellnm.com, which then also takes you to the website. But I think it's important for individuals to know what the different insurers are providing for their products, and so what's best suited for that individual or for that individual's family.
And then there are those who presently have coverage that might carry them until, say, the end of the first or second quarter of 2014. They will then simply enter the exchange thereafter as needed, yes?
That's correct. That's absolutely right. And when, you know, when you go to the website or when you decide that that's, after looking at the different products, there's always important information that an individual should have on hand when they go to a website. You know, they need to have their social security number for themselves as well as everyone else in the family. They should have employment and income information such as, you know, tax returns or W-2 forms, and they should know what their policy number if they have an existing health insurance coverage as well.
And anything else you think our listeners should be aware of on this first day of open enrollment in our state's exchange?
Well, you know, there's going to be an awful lot happening on both the state as well as the federal level. We have the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange, which is starting operation, and we've also got the situation where we're talking about the Centennial Care, which is the Medicaid portion, and then that coverage starts January 1. Of course, on the federal level, we got the budget discussion on the continuing resolution for the budget and Obamacare, and so there's an awful lot that's happening October 1. And we don't know how many individuals are going to rush right in, and I think that most individuals will probably take their time and evaluate the products that the insurers are producing. And, you know, there's just a lot of information that's still out there, and I would highly suggest your listeners to just take their time, evaluate all the products, know what's best for them, and know what's best for their families.
Dr. J.R. Dameron, chair of our State Health Insurance Exchange, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from Lannan Foundation, presenting a reading and conversation with Jamaica Kincaid on Wednesday, October 16th, 7 p.m. at the Linzic. Novelist and short story writer Jamaica Kincaid's books include Lucy and Annie John. Her recent See Now Then chronicles of the death of a marriage like a beautiful elegy. Kincaid, whose work has been called loosely autobiographical, has said, "Everything I say is true and everything I say is not true." Tickets at the Linzic or TicketSantaFe.com.
16 minutes past the hour here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. Think New Mexico, which describes itself as a results-oriented think tank whose mission is to improve the quality of life for all New Mexicans, is out with a new jobs creation initiative. The Santa Fe-based organization's effort seeks to counter recent negative economic trends in New Mexico, including a state economy that in 2012 had the 47th slowest rate of growth, with close to 15% of the workforce either under or unemployed. One of the think tank's proposals calls for offering incentives to international students who display skills in the so-called STEM areas of study, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. KSFR's Tom Trowbridge has the story.
Joining me today is Think New Mexico Executive Director Fred Nathan. Mr. Nathan, I understand that your organization's new initiative is based on interviews with job creators and researching state efforts across the country seeking winning results. So please tell us, highlight if you will, your just published job creation initiative.
We wanted to do a report on how we can improve the jobs climate in New Mexico. And I think one of the overriding themes which really came out of that research is that picking winners and losers, which is how many state governments, including New Mexico, doesn't really work and has underperformed. And a better strategy is really to focus, which is to look instead at creating a climate so that all businesses can succeed.
Your report suggests that New Mexico broadened qualifications regarding students paying in-state tuition, particularly international students with strengths in those key STEM areas you mentioned. And as an example, you point to Andy Lim, the founder and CEO of the firm Lavu in Albuquerque, who came to New Mexico 10 years ago from Thailand. When he came, he attended UNM to get an advanced degree. Now, his firm has hired nearly 40 New Mexicans, and venture capitalists have expressed an interest in Lavu, which provides point-of-sale software for restaurants and retail stores.
But he came here because of serendipity. He had a friend who lived here. We want to get more Andy Lims in New Mexico to come here for intentional reasons, because we're charging in-state tuition, and they can get a great degree and live in a state that's got a high quality of life.
That's the first tier in Think New Mexico's job creation proposal. The second has to do with growing firms that are already here. And the report reviews the strategy of attracting businesses through incentives before they even break ground or hire a single employee. This has been tried with mixed results in New Mexico and nationwide. Your study suggests offering instead what are described as post-performance incentives and highlights a successful model used by one of our neighboring states.
Utah, by contrast, is the only state that we know of that's doing post-performance incentives. So they say to entrepreneurs and others that want to either relocate to Utah or expand within Utah, do what you say you'll do, and we will rebate up to 30% of your income taxes, your withholding taxes, and your sales taxes, because those are the companies they've figured out that are more likely to stay and to grow. And they've been hugely successful with this. They started this program 5 years ago, and they have created over 25,000 jobs.
The post-performance approach, the report points out, also eliminates what's termed a clawback, where states such as New Mexico provided incentives to companies that don't deliver and then try to, quote, claw back and recover the lost public investment. The third suggestion in the report is creating a one-stop portal for filing all paperwork to improve business efficiencies. So, Mr. Nathan, how much would implementing these suggestions cost?
So we did cost it out, and what it would cost to pay for these students to get in-state tuition over 5 years. So we would ramp up right now only about 2.2% of our students at our major public universities, our international students. Our goal is to more than double that to 5%, and that would take 5 years to do. But in the fifth year, it would cost about $12.47 million, about $12.5 million.
How can New Mexico raise the revenues required to make these changes?
We propose eliminating seven what I would call special interest tax loopholes, and that would generate $13.7 million. So we could do this in a way that would be revenue neutral to the state.
And is there anything else you would like our listeners to know about Think New Mexico's job creation initiative?
Well, if your listeners like what they hear and they're interested in supporting this, one thing I would encourage them to do is to go to our website at www.thinknewmexico.org. They can get a copy of the booklet that we've put out, and they can also contact their legislators.
Fred Nathan, Executive Director of Think New Mexico, many thanks for joining us today on KSFR's At Noon. For KSFR News, I'm Tom Tropridge.
Support comes from MexicanWolves.org, inviting you to attend a Save the Lobo rally, followed by a public hearing on proposals that will help decide the future of Mexican wolves in the Southwest. This Friday, October 4th, at the Embassy Suites Hotel on Woodward Place, Northeast in Albuquerque. For more information about Friday's Save the Lobo rally, the public hearing, and related events taking place that day, visit MexicanWolves.org. That's MexicanWolves.org.
23 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Helium is the second most abundant element in our 14.5 billion-year-old universe. Yet, here on Earth, we are approaching depletion of all known stores of it after only 100 years or so of use in the modern industrial age. It's a problem of growing concern as the gas is used in a host of medical and technological applications. It comes to our attention this week as the annual Albuquerque Balloon Fiesta gets underway with the 18th annual America's Challenge Balloon Race. Most of the 500 or more balloons you'll see at Balloon Fiesta Park are simple hot air devices rigged with propane burners that heat normal air, causing it to expand and rise as the means of lifting. The challenge race, however, is a duration and distance contest requiring something of longer lasting effect. Previously, that's been helium. But helium scarcity has this year's challenge, like last year, again featuring five teams, all of them using balloons specifically made to use cheaper hydrogen gas instead. The U.S. began stockpiling helium back in the 1920s, the young era of aviation that also included dirigibles that used the gas along with hydrogen as well. Back in the mid-1990s, though, in efforts to trim federal spending, a bipartisan plan was created to allow the government to sell off its helium stockpiles held at a federal facility in Texas on the open market in annual allocations to offset a debt to the U.S. Treasury. In recent years, however, it has become apparent there's precious little of the stuff left. Last year, then-outgoing Senator Jeff Bingaman introduced a successful bill that will maintain the federal facility beyond the old sell-off date of 2015, while also seeking to index helium market prices to their fair and actual value. For some background on helium and its uses and why the shortfall could have devastating consequences, we turn to UNM chemistry professor Karen Ann Smith.
Helium is the second most common element in the universe. There is relatively little of it on the Earth because it's so light. It's the second lightest element next to hydrogen, and it's what's called a noble gas or an inert gas, and it doesn't really react with anything. And whereas hydrogen reacts with lots of things. It's part of water. It's part of part of your body, part of food, part of lots of things. Helium doesn't react with anything, and so it's just this gas that's by itself. It doesn't weigh very much, and so it tends to float to the top of the atmosphere and go off into space.
Helium on Earth comes as a byproduct of uranium decay, an extremely slow process. Smith notes that the substance is found here in New Mexico, as we have an abundance of uranium and underground natural gas stores.
Helium is typically found with natural gas, and so when natural gas is mined in New Mexico, in Texas, in various other places, that's where the helium comes from.
The professor also talks about one of medicine's biggest concerns over a helium shortage.
The biggest use, and certainly the one I am most familiar with, is the use of liquid helium for what are called superconducting magnets. And superconducting magnets have uses in physics research, in chemistry research, and they're also the basis for MRIs. So magnetic resonance imaging systems have a large magnet which is made of superconducting wire, which has to be kept in liquid helium. And a great deal of helium is used for that purpose. It is often recaptured, it is often recycled, but those are not 100% perfect, and so there is some loss. In addition, there's a great deal of helium used, again, to keep for either superconducting magnets or to do experiments at very low temperatures. And efforts are made to recapture that helium. It isn't always possible, and it isn't always at the moment cost-effective. That's likely to change over the next 10 to 20 years as the price of helium absolutely skyrockets. For these superconducting magnets, there is no replacement for liquid helium.
As for any technologies that may allow us to manufacture helium, Smith says there is nothing currently that can perform that task in the short term.
Either nuclear fusion, maybe nuclear fission. Certainly there is some helium produced in some nuclear fission processes. But I don't think certainly none of them are realistic in the foreseeable future. So certainly we would consider it a non-renewable resource with a finite lifetime.
Storage of helium is also tricky, as the gas's atoms are so small.
Since it's so light, it will actually migrate through the walls even of like a stainless steel tank over time. Even the MRI magnets, they lose helium both because it turns to gas and has to escape, but also, a small amount of it gradually seeps through the stainless steel.
And of the upcoming America's Challenge race with only hydrogen balloons this year, Smith also offered her perspective on helium versus hydrogen and the reason why a different balloon design is needed for each gas.
Hydrogen is even lighter than helium, so it's even smaller, so it would be likely to go through pores. So that's probably part of it. And then the other part would certainly be trying to contain it so that a spark could not accidentally ignite it. Helium, because it's non-combustible, if you dropped a match in a helium-filled balloon, it would just go out.
The UNM professor says that if the day arrives without access to more helium, it would have tremendous consequences around the globe.
Literally, if there was no liquid helium, a lot of chemical research and a lot of research into technology would stop.
That was Karen Ann Smith with UNM. More of At Noon coming up for you in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Lannan Foundation. Lannan Foundation presents a public lecture by Jeremy Scahill, author, journalist, and national security correspondent for The Nation magazine, on Wednesday, October 30th at 7 p.m. at the Linzic Performing Arts Center, followed by a conversation with writer and editor Tom Englehart. Tickets available now. Call 988-1234. More information at Lannan.org.
Santa Fe's fire department has been both entertaining and instructing some international visitors in recent days. Joining us now to give us the details is Fire Chief Eric Litzenberg. Chief, tell us about your guests.
Yeah, we had a group come from Livingstone, Zambia, which included the fire chief of the Livingstone Fire Department. His name was Chief Elvis Machakwende. And actually, today is the day they are leaving. They are returning back to Zambia. But over the weekend, on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we were able to enroll him and have him participate in our AutoX Advanced Extrication course, which has to do with extrication of heavy machinery, disentanglement from farm equipment, extrication when semis and buses are involved, etc. And it just seemed like a really good matchup to have the fire chief coming from Zambia, where they probably have a lot of issues with this kind of machinery, and we happen to have the special skill and the ability to train on it. So we spent the weekend training him in that AutoX, and it was a phenomenal weekend. We also had 80 other participants from throughout the state of New Mexico and the United States. So that was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then we got the chance yesterday with the chief of Livingstone to tour him around our great city and show him the other services that we perform. We talked a little bit about how we fight fires, how we deal with risk reduction in the wildland urban interface, and we took him out to our dispatch center and showed him how we keep track of, send, and keep track of our resources during emergencies. And just a great opportunity for us to share what we have and learn from not only another person in our profession, but somebody from another country. Great weekend for him and great weekend for us. I know that.
And how did all this come to pass? Was it initiated by you acting as an ambassador of our fire department to make this happen?
Yeah, I was actually requested, and the request actually came in when Chief Barbasalis was still our fire chief about a year ago, that we start setting up this relationship with Chief Machakwende and the Livingstone Fire Department. Our mayor, Mayor Koss, had gone over there and started thinking about signing a sister city agreement with them. And he identified that their fire department was really in need of the special skills that we have and that it was a good relationship. So for the past year, we discussed it with their chief and discussed the opportunity for him to come out and train with us. And about a month ago, it seemed like it was going to come to fruition. And obviously it happened. We were able to get him over here and do the training. And, really, this was the first of what we hope will be a number of trainings that we do with him over here. And who knows, maybe somebody from our department and our city can go over there and really help foster this relationship more in the future. But again, it's been a good year of communications with them, and it ended with this weekend event, which was just fantastic.
Santa Fe Fire Chief Eric Litzenberg, good to have you with us here at noon on KSFR. 12:33 here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, is the ever-appropriate time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
Feet are kind of interesting. In humans, unlike apes and monkeys, feet are like hands that forgot how to work, except those gifted individuals who through circumstances are forced to use their feet for hands. But even then, the feet don't equal the hands. Although the argument could be made that feet make better hands than hands make feet. A slight turn here, but still foot-related. On Facebook, I found a reflexology chart. Reflexology, of course, uses pressure points on the bottoms of the feet to positively affect other parts of the body. I think reflexology has validity. Think of how good a good foot massage makes you feel. There are pressure points on the bottom of your feet for important body parts like eyes, lungs, hearts, kidneys, bladder, that should have been heart, spleen, pancreas, stomach, and so on. Interestingly or not, I have a special reflexology pressure point on the bottoms of my feet. I press them, my mouth opens, I start talking, and I stick a foot in my mouth, sometimes two. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's Extended Noon News Hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the News Desk. With many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Tom Trowbridge. We'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you, and as always, we hope you join us.